Welcome to the Holistic Wealth Podcast. I'm your host, Keisha Blair, wife, mother of three, author of Holistic Wealth, and founder of the Institute on Holistic Wealth. The show will showcase various experts in the key pillars of holistic wealth. Each week, we deliver the best information on how to become holistically wealthy and live your best life. Today, we have a very special guest with us. We have Candace Spears, and Candace is an author, entrepreneur, coach, and she's here to discuss a very important topic, the billion-dollar cost of misalignment and why Black women pay it. Now, Candace will be sharing her perspective on why putting everyone else first has immeasurable opportunity costs for Black women financially, emotionally, socially, and why Black women are so often in a place where this is necessary and what we can do to change that. So welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you here. Just want to start off with your journey, because you were in a Fortune 500 company and you left, and you know, to just do your own thing, examine your own identity, and to take the next step forward. So Candace, tell us about your journey and how that got started.
Yeah. So first off, thank you for having me, Keisha. I am deeply moved and almost centered by just the work that you are doing. So I just want to say thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you.
You know, my journey has really been this story of discovery. It's been this story of ambition. It's been this story of marrying dreams and goals that you see for yourself that are bigger than the things that you step into can contain. And it's like, oh, how do you get yourself out of that? So I grew up in corporate, like I like to say. Grew up in corporate America, you know, moved around the companies. You know, when I did my resignation, I was a manager at a financial services company at the time, but knew what it was like to be in the space of like, ooh, I work at this company, and ooh, and I'm a Black woman, and ooh, because I have this fancy title, I feel some type of way. All that stuff. I also know what it's like to have that stripped in an instant, you know, having had a company experience where my role went away. And quite frankly, my identity fell into question. And that is like, whoa, you want to start coming face to face with some very real, like, whoa. Who am I anyway? Wait a second. Like, what's going on? So I've seen it all. And right now we're on the path to just continue to support other women, and especially centered on a Black female experience. But whoever you are, to understand, like, I think in your, I was reading your, was it 40 lessons that I learned?
Yep.
Right.
That article.
Yeah. I was reading it, and you were talking about one with like the titles and the work and that kind of your tombstone. To really get centered. So that's my story.
That's amazing. And I think so many women can identify with that. I know I can in so many ways. And so Candace, when we talk about the billion-dollar cost of misalignment, what exactly does that mean?
So if we take even the broadest macro sense, right? We've got 7 billion people on this earth, even the slightest shift in really seizing any type of opportunities or the opportunity cost of not touching it automatically gets you 2 billion, right? At a macro level. Now, when you zoom down and you start talking about the Black female, and we are, you know, a tiny slice of that, you look at some of the things that historically we have done that have just sort of carried through. So historically, us being, of course, caregivers, but think about from the lens of there are policies that have happened in place that have kind of set a portion of this population to say, okay, well, you're better off if you don't have help in the home, even though you have to work harder. And we're not really going to help you, even from government perspective, right? We're not really going to really help you if you've got this other person in the home, like all these things. And you think back, even when we go all the way back to slavery and everybody had to do something and be out in the fields. And we have historically seen that when it comes to Black women, right, they tend to be in lower paying jobs, service related industry, that type of thing. And then you think about that carryover into business. So there's a study, I think it came out last year, or maybe it was this year, by HBR and GEMS, just about sort of what's going on with Black women and taking a look at how, yeah, of course, we are among the fastest growing group of entrepreneurs. But when you start looking at how many of those businesses are surviving past 3 years and into maturity, whew, we are at like half the rate of our white counterparts. And some of that is attributed to, hey, we're getting these businesses off the ground. We're doing what we can do first. Like I can do a service. I can do this. I can sell this small thing, that type of thing. And so I think in part, right, we have had this sort of this history of being in this service related thing that we need to do to survive, doing what we need to do that feels service-like, that feels domesticated to survive. And sort of in this constraint of thinking bigger, really going after what I dream could be possible has been limited just from a need of survival, right? And so that's where when we talk about Black women sort of playing that brunt of it, there's so much, but I gotta do this. So I can't really step over to the place where I'm in a business that is multi-million, multi-billion dollars. And it's that type of thing, right? A survival versus a freedom to thrive type of place, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And as you're talking, I have goosebumps because I completely get, as an economist, in terms of that misalignment for the economy as a whole and that misalignment as it relates to corporate as well as the business world in itself. And so I feel like we've had so many Black women on this podcast that have spoken about the lack of opportunities and the fact that our potential and our collective potential is not being tapped into in the way that it could for everyone's benefit, not just for women, but for everyone, including the next generation coming. And that's so sad because I feel like, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking about tokenism in the workplace and how we're heavily tokenized. And there's a misalignment. I think we could even talk about the $1 billion opportunity cost of tokenism. Because when we get into these roles, right, and then we're tokenized, we can't fulfill the functions that we were hired to do. You know, it's just like, oh, well, you're here just symbolically. I had a guest on this podcast, Selena Cezanne Chavan, and she is just amazing. She said, you know, sometimes we're given a seat at the table, but we're not on the menu. And when I think about tokenism, I think about that. And that $1 billion misalignment that you talk about is wrapped up in all of that, which gives me goosebumps because Black women have so much to offer. We have so much to offer. And so, Candace, from your experience, what can we do to address this? I mean, both on the level of I'm a Black woman, you're a Black woman in our daily lives, and we have so much going on already, right? Because as you said, when I was introducing you, and as you've said too, there's so many layers of responsibilities on Black women, right? We have so, so much that we do in our homes, in our communities, everywhere. So how do we begin to address this? I mean, even from your personal experience, how do we go about this?
You know, one thing, and I just want to call back to one thing that you said, because I think it ties in here. You know, when you talk about that sort of tokenism and sort of carrying that around, like it, within that, especially when you are in the place where if this is my workplace, if this is my means of survival, how I feed my family and myself, there comes with that this kind of like, if it happens long enough, this is kind of what I need to do to be successful. And that means I also probably need to play the part, right? Whatever that means, right? Yeah. Whether it's what I say, how I dress, what I do, like it's tied to my survival. I think the thing, this is going into the next part of like, well, what do you do? One of the very important things, and I focus heavily on entrepreneurship and supporting women, you know, out of the workplace. But even while you're in the workplace, if that's not your path, because that's not everybody's path, and that's taking some intentional time to sort of get focused on who am I? And that, you know, that may sound like when I say it, like, oh, okay, like this is some woo-woo thing to do. I know for you that that is not, because I've already seen some of your stuff. So I'm like, okay, I'm talking to you. You should know what's going on. But seriously, especially if you are in this place where you've either experienced some level of trauma at a workplace, because that's where you spend most of your time, or even on the outside, because it's so easy to, just because we're trying to do what we need to do to get our needs met and live life, sort of get caught up in living this something that isn't necessarily ours. So to know, like, well, who am I? What is my aspiration? Right. And then to ask yourself, if that's my aspiration, let me look at my current everything and just sort of put it in its place. Does this job that I'm at right now, right, is that aligned with my aspiration? Is it just something that I'm doing for now? Right. And if that's fine with you, that's fine. If the answer is no, I need to do something else and that's a different job, it's fine. If the answer is no, I need to do something else and it's a company, it's fine. But evaluate what it is, so that you don't become it by default. So I think that's the first thing. I think the second thing, it really gets into, like, I am a woman of faith. And so my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. But even if you are not, when it comes to the spirituality of things, right? I recall, and it's so funny, I keep coming back to your 40 thing, because literally I'm reading this and I'm like, oh my gosh, that alignment there. But the whole idea of understanding and relying on your intuition and what are the things that you are truly assigned to do, that often, right, you can't hear it in the busyness of everything else. Right. And the other thing is sometimes, and we're talking, I talk about this in a big way, sometimes the things that we are assigned to do, so like everybody can settle into it now, feel scary. They feel like, I'm not really qualified to do that. They kind of feel like, okay, yeah, maybe it came to me in a dream or it came to me through random people and it keeps coming back, but God, you weren't really talking to me. Like what it can feel like. And I think it's important to know that if I allow myself to be open and connected to what may be my assignment, I'm going to also have to allow myself to know that that may be uncomfortable and scary, and I may feel unqualified, I may feel unprepared, but that could be very well normal, right? So I think that's the other piece. And I think the third piece is really, you know, as we talk about getting into a place where really I see it as like, well, how do you let the dream live in an economically sustainable way, in a life-giving way, right? I think with that, it really is partially getting yourself in surrounded with the other two in check. Getting yourself in a surrounding with people who have the same level of belief in possibility. You know what I mean? The same, it's like the same level of, they may not get where you're going. Okay. Yes, that's different. They don't need to. But to be in a space where people that you are around can see past what's in front of you. Like they can see past what's in front of them, right? That my reality doesn't define the end. This reality isn't a constraint on what can come tomorrow. There is always a way. I'm going to have to say how, and you know, there may be some things going on there for me to move around, but belief that it can happen is an important and powerful sort of force and thing to be in. So I think those are some of the top ones to start making that way towards. What is bigger? Like, what's the opportunity that I'm missing out on because I'm not necessarily where I want to be?
Absolutely right. You know, so many things are going through my mind as you're talking. We get into the survival mode and we stay there for much of our lives. We're on this hamster wheel and we never stop to wander unless, of course, something major happens, right? That throws us off course. And we never stop to wonder, what's my purpose? What's my mission? And, you know, it's funny you talk about the 40 Life Lessons article because, you know, I was forced into that spot where I had to be like, well, what's my purpose? What's my mission? And you know how you mentioned about identity? And this is one reason why, even in that article, I said, yeah, your job title doesn't define you. It's not, you know, none of that, because You're so right. We get wrapped up in this title thing and it can disappear in a day and we're left in a tailspin, you know, wondering, who am I? What have I been working for? But I find that if we outline a broader mission for ourselves, right, which I talk about in Holistic Wealth a lot, then it's so good. And there's several points that you touched on that I completely agree with, you know, getting aligned with those people who can see beyond. So not dwelling on what the naysayers are telling you, because sometimes we get that mission and you're right, it's scary. I remember when I got mine too, it was scary. And even now it scares me, you know, thinking about, wow, this is big and it's bold and it's bigger than I am. But you know what? It's part of, and you're prepared. I know several people are listening and thinking, oh my gosh, I got that, you know, vision and I feel so ill-prepared. You are prepared. And so several things that you touched on, Candace, are so true. You know, it's so funny. I recorded a podcast episode about, it was for Black Women's Equal Pay Day. And statistics show that we miss out on $1 million over the course of our careers. $1 million on average per Black female. When you think about that, it's mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing. And there's so much out there that, you know, we're meant to do. There's so much out there that we're meant to work on. And so this is why I love this conversation, because it's so important for Black women who are wondering, why am I here? So many Black women are tokenized in the workforce and in business. It's not easy either, right? Because then we lack the funding. It's hard when you don't have that network. It's hard when you can't find your people. And all of those tips are amazing, Candace. And so, you know, we talked about identity. So I'm just going to go into the whole financial identity bit, because I felt like I had to step back and think about my identity too. And not just with, you know, who I am and what's my meaning and purpose, but in terms of even my financial identity and what my values were. And it's so empowering to be able to have the words to say it and to communicate it. So I know you took the personal financial identity quiz. So I want to hear from you what your thoughts are, especially as an entrepreneur and, you know, an author. Can you tell us what your results were and what your thoughts are on that?
Yes, yes, yes. So mine came back as the minimalist. And just the first line, right? The minimalist, simple living, keep it simple. Your mantra in life is simple living at its core, and you prefer simplicity in everything. That is me. Let me just say that when it came back. You know, so when we talk about, and this is what is so interesting, and this is one of those things that I kind of wrestled with, and I'm on a bit of a journey here as I'm moving deeper in my own assignment. And one of the things that has always been sort of core to me is financial management, actually, and just how to deal with finances and steward over these finances responsibly. And so when I look at my results, you know, as a minimalist, I think I've come to this place. I don't know. I guess it's just, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I always just have this sense of like, do I need that? Like, literally, that comes to my mind. And it doesn't come as like a, ooh, I'm making a big choice and I'm making a sacrifice. That's not what it is. It's just like a, what would I even do with that? And it doesn't even need to be something that's bought. Like literally, this is a, somebody wants to give you something. No, thank you. I don't have space for that in my life. I don't need that. And so I think, you know, financial management and just sort of having that grasp on like who you are and how you use money, right? What that relationship to money is for you, like what that piece of paper or coin like means for you is important. And I think it can really impact, it can impact your decision-making, of course, but I think it can also impact, right, your emotional states in general, right? Is it, you know, when I have a certain amount of money in my bank account, I feel like, ooh, I'm on top of the world and it makes me feel safe. That can be valid and real. When I spend money on things that perhaps I don't need, but I just like seeing it come in the mail and in a pretty package. Well, you know, I'm not going to say right or wrong. Maybe that's supporting your emotional state, whatever it is. But knowing that it has a play, and if you can know that play alongside of, this is kind of like the tie back to the $1 billion cost. If you know play, right, in alignment to where you want to go, that's a powerful combination. But like money and finances, it is such a like diverse and like rich, no pun intended, but area to play with, right? Especially when you move it past survival and how do I help it help me?
You know what I mean?
Yes. Exactly, which lends itself well to my next question, because I know you're a serial entrepreneur and you also do real estate. And I think real estate is so powerful and can be such a powerful tool for women and for Black women, especially as we talk about, you know, that wealth gap, that racial wealth gap. And so I want to get your views on that, because like even as I'm asking you, I have goosebumps again, because it's such a passionate topic for me, this real estate thing. I love it. And I believe in it as a tool that can empower women and Black women, especially as we talk about those corporate gaps and our skills and talents not being used. So Candace, how did you get started in real estate? And what do you see as the benefits of this for women and Black women in particular?
Yeah. So for me, from like an investor perspective, getting started in real estate is very new. So it's only been since last year, November, from an investor perspective. From a homeowner perspective, so I'm on my second home. So I don't have two homes together, but I'm on my second home, a buy and sell type of transaction. And the only reason I bring this up is because, and I'm going to jump back to the investing piece in a second. The reason I bring it up is because when you talk about financial management, when you talk about using money to get where you want to go, home ownership, especially if bought in the right way with the right variables, can serve as a good catalyst. Now, I know it's got its assets, liabilities, should you get it, should you not, right? That's a whole nother debate. But purely from the perspective of, hey, how much equity do you have? And can you utilize that equity to help you in this thing that you want to do long term while still meeting basic needs? So that's that. But from an investor perspective, so that's new. So last November, I bought 4 acres in the North Woods of Wisconsin. I live in Wisconsin. So that's up north, foresty area, outdoor tourism type of thing. And so this was my first foray into like, okay, I am going to build a property. So it's a real estate development project. I'm going to build a property, actually two is the intention, on this land, and I'm going to Airbnb it. That's what I'm going to do. And so my thought process behind it was like, there were so many like freedom narratives going on in my head. Like, okay, I'm going to do this over and over again. Here's what the narratives were. One, it brought me so much joy to have like acquired land. Like that alone, right? Knowing the history of Black people in this country. So to have done that, and it's like, oh my gosh, yes, ancestors, yes. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, as I thought about my kids, so my intention as I continue here is to get this first project done and move on to the next and the next. And for each of the land sites, they're actually dedicated to my children. And so I have 3 daughters, and the first one, my oldest daughter, is Naomi. So it's the Naomi, and so on and so on. And so the freedom narrative there, as you can imagine, having something to pass along that's not only land, but that also produces money, like just like it keeps going and keeps going. And so that's kind of been my thing on the real estate angle. It's like literally in my mind, okay, acquire more, acquire more, acquire more. I could probably acquire more land than I can build fast enough, just from a cost perspective. But yeah, like dipping into real estate and having like that real property and like land, and what do I want to grow on it, even though it's in a foresty area that other people can come and nourish themselves. Like there's so many like freedom narratives that can come with real estate. So I love it.
That's so true. And as you talk about freedom narratives, I mean, oh my gosh, like there's so many. And even with generational wealth, right, which is a topic that's often discussed too with Black people and Black women. And it can be such a good tool, this real estate, for, you know, generational wealth, And just this feeling of empowerment that it provides, which is so, so true. And I like the fact that you're naming, you know, as you're going for each of the children, because that's something I tend to do too. Like I do the same thing. And it's just amazing. It gives you a sense of purpose with it and this sense of joy about leaving that legacy, right? And really setting them up. Because I think with Black women and generations of Black women, it's setting us up and setting up the next generation to do better than the last, right? And to feel more empowered than we did or parents did or grandparents did. And when you think about how far we've come, it's just unbelievable. And still the struggles that we face, which sometimes I get up and I'm like, I can't believe we're still fighting for those same things. And believe you me, it feels like deja vu and everything all over again wrapped up. So that's an amazing story. And so, Candace, we didn't get into a lot about the entrepreneur part of it, but I want to know more about, so there's the real estate portion and there's your coaching business. So can you tell us more about the coaching side and kind of some of the strategies that you impart on your coaching clients? Like, is it the agility method that you teach? And what do you teach? What do you impart to them?
Some sort of core principles from just like a tactical move fast kind of perspective that I teach in almost everything. Actually, my book has a lot to do with that too. And it is agile. It is lean startup type methodologies. And so where I have found my assignment to be, and we're in a place right now where I'm walking even deeper in this assignment with, I'll talk about that in a quick second. But where my assignment has lived is really in helping people take ownership of their time, talent, and identity. And in particular, it's been helping women take ownership of their time, talent, and identity. Now, where that is moving, and that's done through coaching and group programs. I have a program, Finding Freedom, that's actually coming to an end. I don't know when this is going to be aired, but it's going to be coming to an end very soon as we move into this deeper vision. But the deeper vision is still in that ownership of time, talent, and identity. But what I've learned through some of the things we talked about earlier, sitting and getting even further tied into my identity and further into my assignment and sitting in the stillness. Like when I say stillness, so like over the past 2.5 months, I kind of disappeared from social media. If you look on any of the accounts, so many things happened. But I kind of disappeared from social media, from talking to my email list, all of this stuff to allow space to hear what was happening. And so serving women in that way, and as we talk about this deeper move, it really is, yeah, we still want to take ownership of time, talent, and identity, but taking an extreme focus on centering on the Black female experience. One of the things I recognized when we sort of went down the client roster, they were 99% Black women. And there were so many things that I hadn't talked about. Like I hadn't talked about being careful about taking this identity business and the things that you think or you thought were required to be successful in the face you had to play, like into business and understanding like how that can mess you up. Understanding that there is a difference between just being interested in something and being assigned, like divinely assigned to do it. And just some of the narratives around what we deal with as Black women, while you are trying to get this business off the ground, while these disparities do exist, while these capital shortfalls do exist. And so I'm still playing in that space and we are just going deeper with it and bringing in more technology to support at even further scale for ladies and anyone. You don't have to be a Black woman, but what you will know is the work that we do and the place that we come from and what we teach is centered on the Black female experience. So if you are down for that, because the true belief that if with Black women being at the intersection of gender and race, right, big conversations, if you are building a business from the place of that understanding, everyone is better off. I don't care who you are, what you look like, everyone is. And so that's what I do today, supporting aspiring entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs to the growth levels they want to get to in their own businesses without constraint.
Yeah, no, that's good work. And it's so needed for Black women, Candace. So I really applaud you for that effort. Because, you know, there's a lot of mindset work in that, a lot of work with getting rid of blocks and just dealing with these narratives that we've been told as Black women, that we've been led to believe, which are utterly false. And, you know, the sad thing about it is that we've had these experiences in the corporate world where we're told at the end of the day, you know, sometimes that wasn't enough. Or somebody else is getting that promotion. And so we're dealing with that narrative day in, day out. You know, it's almost like we need healing and therapy from that. But at the end of the day, it's not showing in terms of those promotional opportunities or in those, you know, opportunities for recognition. And then we start a business and we need to unravel all of that, right? There's a lot of work that goes on with that. And I'm sure you see it in your clients too, right?
Yeah. And the thing is, I'm so glad you brought that up because the thing is this, like you can go in blissfully unaware and like bless it. Everything that we see on social media that tells us like, okay, let's just go ahead, get this money. You can do it, get this money. And that doesn't tap into it. And listen, I'm saying this, Keisha, from a place of a person who fell along that track until very recently in having this space of silence that, whoa, all these other things are at play for us as Black women to not bring that holistic, look, there you go, Ian Keisha, to not bring that holistic piece to our business strategy is a disservice. And yes, we saw it over and over again in our clients, over and over again. Like, it wouldn't be the tactic. It would be the stuff that we had to stop and talk about because confidence things were coming in from like a self-image perspective. Things coming in about like, oh, but I was rejected before, so I'm not sure I'm really qualified as the undertone.
Oh my gosh. There's so much, Candace. There's just so much. Because, you know, in the beginning of this podcast, when we spoke about identity and the fact that we had to kind of play a certain game in order to succeed, you know, I remember one friend saying to me, we have to straddle two worlds. We walk into corporate or we walk into, you know, business, into certain environments, and we have to put on a different persona. We have to become someone else. And we're dealing with all of that on top of the regular day-to-day, right? We're dealing with all of that and playing it cool, playing it calm. And there's so much of that that we do. It's unbelievable. I could go on for hours talking about this with you for hours, but I'm so happy that you had a chance to come on the podcast to share your experience, to give some tips and tools and strategies so that we can talk about this, because there needs to be a space, you know, a space where Black women can heal and talk about these things and forge a path of success. You know, and so I'm so happy. And Candace, if you want to tell our listeners where to find you, you know, on social media, your website, anywhere else, please let the audience know where they can find you.
Yeah, the best place to go right now is just head over to CandaceSpears.com. There are, so you can link there from to all the different places, podcast, social, what have you. And again, depending on when this comes out, like get in on the conversation because we are having these very real conversations. This is no longer a, what's this something on the side? It's central to this narrative. So CandaceSpears.com is the best place to go.
Okay, perfect. So glad that we had this conversation. I had so much fun. As I said, I could talk about this all day for hours and hours, but thank you so much for joining us today, Candace. It was amazing having you.
Thanks for having me, Keisha. Keep doing what you are doing. So, so necessary. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us this week on Holistic Wealth with Keisha Blair. Make sure to visit our website, KeishaBlair.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS so you will never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes, or if you simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. Are you a member of the Institute on Holistic Wealth? If not, what are you waiting for?
Go to instituteonholisticwealth.com/memberships to choose your membership plan and join. As a member, you get so many perks. Free worksheets, advice, coaching, and a member's workshop to design an intentionally designed life. You need to figure out your life purpose? Take the Build Your Life Purpose Portfolio online self-paced course. You're struggling with all your money decisions? Take the free financial identities quiz and then take the course. You recently had a breakup, job loss, or experienced the death of a loved one? Take the holistic healing course. You need an overall plan to achieve holistic wealth? We will help you figure out your holistic wealth blueprint. And of course, if you want to start making money by helping others achieve holistic wealth, become a certified holistic wealth consultant. Regardless of what career you've got, the Institute will show you how to increase your income and walk in your purpose. The sooner you join, the sooner you start to achieve a more holistically wealthy lifestyle. And you're going to want to stay for a very long time. So go to instituteonholisticwealth.com/memberships to join. If you haven't read the book yet, pick up a copy of the award-winning, best-selling Holistic Wealth 32 Life Lessons to help you find purpose, prosperity, and happiness.